When he hit 5 consecutive wins earlier this year, Seb Vettel sent him a message saying, you can do it, go on, go for the 9, which I thought was really nice.
At the start of the year, he was in such a good place, and I think you could see coming away from Zandvoort, he was back in that place again.
Lawrence, do you think that Lawson's result stems from brushing shoulders with paddock royalty the day before being put in the car?
It must be.
Welcome to Unlapped. Katie George, Lawrence Edmondson, Nate Saunders. The boys have moved on to Monza, but we, of course, are going to get their thoughts on Zandvoort because it seemed to be an extremely uneventful, boring race that nobody really wanted to attend. No one will ever look back on and remember in history. Oh my gosh, that thing was bonkers. I need your all's takeaways. We're obviously going to get into the biggest storylines that came out of it. But just overall, Lawrence, what was it like on the ground?
It was fantastic. I hope it came across on TV, the emotion, the passion, the bouncing around, the electronic dance music that goes into having a Zandvoort race event, because it is just unlike anything else. And I think F1 have tried to replicate that at other tracks, and it just doesn't work because you need the Dutch there. That's the, you know, that is the key ingredients, is the Dutch to make it into this this fantastic 4-day or 3-day party. And the other thing to take away from it, I think, was that a bit of rain at the end of the race, a bit of rain at the start of the race, you know, mix those two in, and you can still have a fantastic race, even if there's one guy who is clearly a class above everyone else. So it was great. And also kind of dispelled this belief that existed, certainly when Zandvoort first came onto the calendar, that it's no good for passing, because we just had so many overtakes. I think I saw somewhere in our show note there was a record. I'll dig it, yeah. Or one of you guys can dig it out. And it was just like action throughout. And okay, it really looked like Max wasn't going to win, but there was enough action going on elsewhere and enough of a chance of rain and what that might do that Max had to work really hard for that one.
You nailed it. It was the most overtakes all time in any race, with 186 overtakes, which is just mind-boggling. That's 16 more than China in 2016. Nate, how did it feel witnessing it all play out?
It was kind of hard to keep track of what was going on, to be honest, because especially those first few laps, it was great, because you basically had, obviously, everyone coming into pit. You had Perez pitting and then was out in the lead. And for a second, you thought, well, this looks like Perez is to lose. We know how that played out in the end. You know, it very much was a lead he lost very, very quickly. But yeah, it was really chaotic. And there was, I think, what always makes a great Formula One race is when there's real jeopardy about the win. And, you know, and you, if you're not sure, I think Lawrence is kind of spot on in that you didn't ever feel like Verstappen was completely losing the race, but there did feel like for a few spells during the race that his win was really under threat. And we haven't seen that often. I think just the last time we saw it come close, you know, in those conditions was Monaco. But yeah, just fantastic. And I think as well, what was great about it is, you know, the fans, to their credit, you know, they sat through two absolute deluges of rain either end of the race. And still by the end of the race, obviously their guy had won, just an amazing atmosphere from start to finish. So full credit to the Dutch fans. And you can just see how popular Max is in his home country. I think for Lawrence and I, we both grew up in the UK, and you know, we've seen firsthand how big Lewis became from 2007 onwards, but you can really see the same with Max. And it's just, you know, everything there, it might as well be the Verstappen Grand Prix. They might as well just be that blatant about it when they name it. But it's just really cool to see. And the Dutch fans were just they're, you know, real credit to themselves. So I loved it. And I think probably contender for one of the races of the year so far. So that's always a good thing.
Has to be. I would say probably up there, definitely top three. It was Max's 9th consecutive race, tying Sebastian Vettel's all-time record. His dominant record-breaking season obviously continues with a win at his home race, which was mega. And Lawrence, to your point, I think that came across on television as you were a viewer who wasn't on the ground, being able to watch that, and you could see the energy and the passion, and it made you want to be there. Like, you felt like you were missing out on something, which I think Formula One obviously hopes to achieve with more and more races on each calendar every single season. Max is now looking to make it 10 in a row at Monza and claim sole possession of the all-time consecutive race wins record. When we spoke last week, Lawrence, you said, you know, you didn't know if it would really register with Max. He's not one to really, you know, make a big to-do about records or breaking them for that matter. What did you get a sense of from him after the win?
I think, definitely registered. And he was asked about it. One of the interesting things he said was that when he hit 5 consecutive wins earlier this year, Seb Vettel sent him a message saying, you can do it. Go on, go for the 9, which I thought was really nice. So like, you might imagine that Seb was there like, ah, oh, damn it. Someone's joined me on this 9 wins. And you think of all the records that Seb got during his career, and quite a few of them have fallen Max's way because he was that little bit younger coming through. I think it did mean something to him. He said he doesn't think about it. He doesn't go into race weekends thinking, oh, you know, this is the one that's going to match Sebastian's record. He goes through every session just kind of figuring out what needs to change on the car into the next practice session, what they'll do in qualifying, what they'll do in the race. During the race, he's just thinking about, you know, gaps behind, forward, what they're going to do with strategy. So it's not playing on his mind, I don't think. And I don't think he would have been terribly upset had he not got it. But then having got it, you know, I think just the reality of winning 9 Formula One races in a row, whether that's a record or not, that is an incredible achievement because it requires this consistency. And he even pointed out that, you know, other teams have had dominant cars and not been able to do it. And I think that was a little, I don't know, I don't think it was a nasty dig, but it was a little kind of pointer to Lewis. Of course, Lewis had that period of dominance with Mercedes and never quite got it together. Now, I'm sure Lewis fans will say, well, he always had a more competitive teammate, and there's all sorts of reasons that you could point to a number of reliability issues. You could point to Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton crashing into each other in Spain in 2016. You know, there are many examples of where he, you know, where he probably faced more challenges. But it still is very impressive. And another person who commented on how impressive it was Fernando Alonso, who, of course, finished second and was sat next to him in the post-race press conference and said, you know, I think it's often underestimated what it takes to win, even when you have the fastest car, which undoubtedly Max has, to get it all together every weekend at that level with all the stuff that gets thrown at you during a Grand Prix, especially that one with the weather, and then still come out on top and still come out on top convincingly. 9 times in a row is very, very impressive. So I'm not betting against him to do 10. About you guys, but you know, it seems very likely. But it shouldn't be underestimated what he's achieved.
Yeah, the consistency is just unmatched, clearly. And we'll get into some more records that are currently on the line.
And just on that quickly, I mean, I did some digging into this at the weekend. So when Max went into that season against Lewis 2021 as champion, he had 10 career victories to his name. So in the space of a couple months this year, you know, and this weekend he could get that 10th in a row. Just shows you how rare it is to get that many wins under your belt. I mean, one thing that when Lewis was winning all those races and, you know, moved past Schumacher, you realize when somebody has a dominant car, they can really rack up those wins quickly. But Max, you know, right now you look at the trajectory of it and you just start to think like this is one record he's on the cusp of breaking. But I mean, amazing to think 2.5 years where he might be in terms of all of these statistics, because I think he's up to 45 wins now, and you've got Prost next on the all-time list, then Vettel, then there's a big gap, then Schumacher, and already you start to look at it and you think, well, this guy could in the future be challenging these records before he's even 30, which I think is a huge testament to him, because, you know, he's obviously got a great car, but he's delivering just every weekend. So just amazing to watch, and really kind of, you feel really lucky as a journalist to be watching it as well, because you don't always see moments like this in sports. So
let's stick with the trajectory. Have you can you remember or think of a driver of the past with this kind of meteoric rise in such a short amount of time so early on in their career?
I don't know if there's been that many drivers as convincing as Max. I think it became very clear very early on with Max that he was very good. Of course, Lewis Hamilton, you know, went straight into a car that was capable of fighting for a championship and missed out on the championship in 2007 by a single point, tied with Fernando Alonso, who at the time was a two-time world champion, having won in 2005, 2006. That was really impressive because it was a very, very competitive championship. Really, Lewis, you know, had it run again the last few races, I'm sure he would have won it because it was tiny mistakes here and there. So that, I, you know, that is as impressive. Vettel, when, you know, he first came in, we realized, you know, he was very good. He won in a Toro Rosso at Monza, actually, in 2008. And then as soon as he got his hands on a race-winning car in the Red Bull, he looked very good. But even then, it was against Mark Webber. You know, the first season where they were fighting for a championship 2010, it was very, very tight. So I think what's most impressive about Verstappen, and is something that people really struggle to get their head around, and also unfortunately makes the season kind of boring because we lose competition, is that he just demolishes teammates like no other driver I can think of You know, if you think of all the great drivers in the past, perhaps Michael Schumacher is the one where you had something similar, but so often it was loaded in his favor. You know, there were actual contracts in place that meant that he was the number one driver. And while it kind of is that way at Red Bull this year, you know, I think, you know, was it, had it been more competitive between Checo and Max, then I think they would have favored Max. But it, you know, it's just the pure performance he's able to get out of it, and the way that he's demolished teammate after teammate, you know, with Ricardo essentially left because Max was mm-hmm. looking so good and the team was going Max's way. Then Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, and now Sergio Perez. And yeah, it's that is on a different level, I think. But it's, you know, it's really hard to weigh the drivers up against each other and know exactly who's best, who's most impressive. It's very much a matter of opinion. I just hope that we get another chance to see Max challenged in the style that we had in 2021, because that was yeah. fantastic to watch. You know, that I think that is undoubtedly, I don't care how big a fan you are of any driver, that's far more entertaining to watch than seeing someone win every race consecutively.
You don't say. You mentioned two names that bounced back remarkably well on the weekend, Fernando Alonso and Pierre Gasly. Nate, since you were on the Fernando Alonso train early on in the season and you are drinking out of a green San Pellegrino bottle at the moment of water, I'll give you Fernando Alonso, and I want you just to recap what you saw from him. That means, Lawrence, you're on deck with Pierre Gasly, okay?
It was kind of vintage Fernando, wasn't it? It was, you know, it's that hype train has gone a bit quiet. You know, the Aston started out in such a great position, I guess has faded as well, but has also seen Mercedes, McLaren make those leaps before the summer break. But it was just a great example, just a textbook example of what makes Fernando Alonso such a good driver and such an asset to that team. You know, the conditions were mixed up. And if you listen to his radio, you know, for the moment it starts raining, he's saying, this is an opportunity for us to get at least second. He's always thinking about that win, but it's just like he reads the race situation so well. And we see this time and time again, just doesn't make mistakes, you know, in those key moments. And I think that, you know, you're talking about Verstappen being a teammate killer. Fernando at the moment is making Stroll look, you know, I think ordinary is probably putting it mildly, because Stroll's just nowhere near him on a race-to-race basis. And I think in those moments, if you weren't able to get Verstappen in the car, I think Alonso's probably, and Lewis as well, is like right there as the guys you would want in that car, you know, in a competitive car in those conditions, because just a different level. And I think it's a really good boost for Fernando as well, because I think a happy Fernando is what Aston Martin wants. I think when he starts to get frustrated is maybe when we start to see the toys come out the pram a bit, and maybe he starts to be a bit more sassy in some of his answers. But at the start of the year, he was in such a good place. And I think you could see coming away from Zandvoort, he was back in that place again. Not sure how the car will be in normal conditions compared to those others, but it just shows you that when there's points on the table, he's the man to get them. So it's great to see. And I hope it's, you know, I hope it's a sign of things to come, because he signed off, we're going to win one of these eventually to Aston, yeah. which is a big claim to make right now, because obviously it's difficult to see anybody beating Max and Red Bull, but it shows you that he thinks he's delivering everything he can for the car. If they can just make gains, and if they can just capitalize on some of these moments, you know, when Max maybe doesn't, then I think that, yeah, it's right there for the taking. So that's a great feeling for him and a great feeling for the team as well.
Bit cheeky from him too on the podium, acting like he was going to knock over Max Verstappen's trophy. Lando Norris, kudos for you for returning the Hungarian Heron hand-painted porcelain trophy that has been fixed. So Max Verstappen's collection's complete now, is it not?
And love that as well, how careful Max was when it was delivered back to him. He like took the lid off, you know, as if you've been so given back a phone after you've broken it, and you're like, I don't want to break it. It was kind of funny to see that. I actually got to say that the Zandvoort trophies I thought were fantastic. You know, very, very plain, but had the Dutch line on the front of them. Just clear. Yeah, I thought they were great. And the trophies, if every race can have trophies like Hungary and Zandvoort, I think we're in a good spot, because yeah, a mega trophy like that just makes a great photo. I think the drivers will be, that's one they'll be gutted they don't get to keep. A lot of the teams keep those.
Yeah.
So that'd be the top of my list if I had one. So I want that one.
It was great to see him back on the podium. Obviously, that made for a fun moment. But I think it's more realistic of the two drivers we mentioned, Pierre Gasly or Fernando, who would be back on the podium. You'd think it'd be Fernando based on the results Aston Martin was able to get. Not really expecting quite that big of a bounce back, Lawrence, from Alpine and Pierre Gasly. What did you make of his weekend?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it did rather hinge on, he'd been good all weekend, but it did kind of hinge on pit stop at the right time during the rain, but they got that right. And, you know, if you're going to score podiums in such a competitive block of teams behind Red Bull, then you've got to make the right calls at the right time. And, you know, a number of other drivers will point at the wrong call as the reason that they weren't on the podium. So so they got that right. And then, you know, there was a lot of pressure because not only were the conditions very difficult, with Perez's 5-second penalty hanging over him, Gasly had to make sure that he stayed within those 5 seconds. And, you know, he had to push and the conditions were bad. And, you know, it's such a tricky circuit. One tire slightly out of line and you're in big trouble. So that was impressive. But I think more than anything else, both Alpine and Gasly really needed this result. We know that there's been this huge upheaval at the Belgian Grand Prix weekend where they got rid of team principal Otmar Szafnauer and sporting director Alain Permain. We also know that Gasly has kind of struggled to adapt a little bit to Alpine this year. You know, he looked so convincing at AlphaTauri previously, and you know, we all wanted him to get this second chance because, of course, he was at Red Bull before. As I mentioned, he was one of those drivers that was demolished by Max Verstappen, and I think probably because he was in that role too early. Now he does seem like a fully mature driver, but something hadn't quite clicked this year with the Alpine compared to Esteban Ocon, who is also a driver that I rate quite highly. So to see him, you know, get the podium, Ocon of course got a podium in Monaco in mixed conditions. Gasly got one in Zandvoort. And when you look at the performance of the Alpine car, which, let's be honest, is not good enough this year compared to where they want to be and where they should be, you're going to have to rely on mixed conditions to take results. And the fact that they've done that at two races where the opportunity presented itself is very, very good. So, I'm really pleased to see him back there because whenever I think of Gasly, I also think of Monza here, where he won for AlphaTauri, which was just such a fairy tale story. So, it's great to see him when he gets in those positions, when something's really on the line. I think ever since he had that time at Red Bull and then was dropped, he knows how important those moments are and he goes and chases them. And as he proved in Zandvoort, he can get them.
I think you put it nicely that the Frenchman got the pit stop right. The Italians, on the other hand, hate to bring it up. I feel like this is Groundhog's Day, deja vu. We have this conversation often. Poor Charles Leclerc, obviously his nightmare continues in the pits. What went through your all's minds when you saw that debacle?
Yeah, I mean, deja vu is a good way of putting it. I think that's the thing that's crazy about Ferrari is just it's just these things just seem to continually happen. And, you know, there was another journalist kind of giggling along as they showed the replay of the Ferrari driver guy coming out with a tire and almost falling over the car. I don't know. It's just a painful point in Ferrari's history, isn't it, coming up? And, you know, I know that they come to Monza with, you know, a new livery and they always talk about the history of stuff, but it's really just, it's difficult to get excited about where they're at. But I think seeing that, it just, I feel like, and I don't know if you guys are the same, but I think all of the kind of the shock and the frustration of last year has just gone. And it's now just accepted that this is kind of where what Ferrari does on a regular basis. Now, I feel like last year people were genuinely quite upset by all these things. Now it's almost become so routine. I think people are just kind of used to it.
I do think go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I mean, there was a kind of reason behind the Leclerc one in that the rain hit in that final corner and Ferrari, I don't think were, I mean, they should be more aware of it because other teams were, but Leclerc was one that made the call. So he came into the pits and basically told them he was in the pits as he hit the speed limits and went in. And so they had a very small amount of time to react. And now, of course, you can say, you know, there were other teams that got it right. Perez nailed it, Gasly nailed it, and Alpine and Red Bull. But, you know, there was a slight reason for it. There was actually one later in the race where there was a fan video overlooking, I think it was the switch back onto intermediate tyres at the end. And Sainz comes in. And again, you know, Ferrari are nowhere. There's tyres missing, stuff like that. And Perez comes in after Sainz and leaves before him because Red Bull nailed their pit stop. So clearly there is a slight issue there. But, you know, I think you have to look a little bit at the reasons behind it. And the other thing is if Leclerc had stayed out, you know, if they'd made the call which Mercedes made, for example, which was keep the drivers out, then Leclerc would have lost even more places. And then, of course, the real reason that race went wrong was because he'd collided with Piastri on the opening lap and damaged his front wing, which then went on to damage his floor. So, you know, it's one of those things, but I remember saying last podcast, with these teams now, if you're Ferrari, Aston Martin, Mercedes, McLaren, to some extent Alpine, it's small, tiny little things that are making big, big differences because they're so tightly matched. And it just does seem that for Ferrari, kind of went against them. Then again, Carlos Sainz, you know, I think did a pretty good job salvaging the position that he did. And I think if we're going to talk about messing up in that race, really the prize goes to Mercedes, because, you know, they messed up their strategy, and Hamilton afterwards felt that he had a car capable of matching Max's pace. If you looked at some of the lap times just before they went back to before the rain shower hit at the end, he was actually doing that. So, you know, that's particularly galling when you've got a car that is clearly very quick, and yet decisions you made early in the race have put you out of position.
There's a graphic online where the start happened on the starting grid, first five laps, and then there shows a graph and a line from each driver to where they actually ended up by lap five. Mercedes, to your point, Lawrence, it was unbelievable. I just couldn't imagine that much happened in such a short amount of time, which obviously led to entertainment as a viewer or a fan watching it. But I agree. I think Tifosi fans probably applauding at this moment. Like, see, thank you for having our back a little bit here. But yeah, Mercedes fans obviously not walking away from that weekend feeling very happy about things. For Ferrari, Monza, obviously, this upcoming weekend, home race. Hopefully they get back in a position to fight for podiums. I thought Alex Albon was impressive as well. He continues to be impressive in that Williams.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I do want to get your all's thoughts on Liam Lawson and get an update on Daniel Ricciardo, if we have it, after his crash on Friday that led to a hand surgery. Where do we stand with Daniel Ricciardo, Nate?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was really gutting to see Ricciardo get that injury. Obviously, he just came back with there was such good vibes around his return. Such an unlucky crash as well. It seems like he's, you know, in that crash, see drivers trying to take their hands away as quick as possible. He just hasn't been able to get it away as quickly as possible. What we were told is it was a broken, and I've got to get this right, because me and Lawrence kept talking about it all weekend, and I'm now struggling to remember the bone. Metacarpal, I think it is, in the hand. Yeah. And so he
are
broke.
You a doctor?
No, well, I should be, apparently. Apparently I missed my calling years ago. Kind of gutted that 18-year-old me didn't study medicine, because that was... If you're a patient right now, you'd be feeling great about your chances of recovery. But he broke that in a couple of places, one of his metacarpals. And obviously that, you know, as a Formula One driver, you know, that is going to sideline you short term. He's obviously missing this weekend. From what I understand, so he's had surgery. He had surgery on Sunday. He's currently seeing a doctor called Javier Mir, I think is the way you pronounce the name. And he's the guy who looked after Lance Stroll earlier this year. And there's actually a video of Stroll seeing Ricciardo in the paddock. And you can actually hear them talking about that. And he says, oh, look, you know, he's the best. Like, let me put you in touch with him. So I think he's working with the absolute best in the business. From what I understand, Ricciardo wants to come back as soon as he can, obviously. But Singapore is kind of the aggressive aim to come back. But it's difficult to see that. You know, that's another 2 weeks away. And it's such a difficult circuit for a driver to come back. There's so many turns. It's, you know, if you've got any doubts about your hand there, I don't think you're going to come back. But Christian Horner kept saying at the weekend, he said, for most people, that would put you out for 2-3 months. You know, with the specialists that are available for these guys and the fact that they're just Formula One drivers and they'll just do anything they can to get back racing, 4 to 6 weeks does seem possible to do. Problem Ricciardo has is if he misses Singapore, Red Bull then has a decision. Do they take Liam Lawson out of the car for Suzuka? Do you put Ricciardo back in at short notice for Japan, which also isn't the easiest circuit again, but then you start asking yourself, well, what is an easy quote unquote circuit for somebody with a hand injury? So I think we'll see him back in the car pretty, pretty soon, but I think Lawson's got at least one more run with it, and he'll get a full weekend this weekend because, you know, the poor guy last week was dropped in and probably the most unenviable debut anyone's had for a long time. Rain for his first practice session at a Zandvoort circuit that is, it's so much down to rhythm. You've got to be so, with those banked corners and just the way that circuit kind of flows around, you've got to have so much confidence in it. He had rain in the practice session. He then qualified last on the Saturday, which I don't think was, you know, I don't think anyone would have expected much more from him. But he raced pretty well in those conditions. And there's actually a great video of him overtaking Max at one point, just after Max has switched back, I think, at the end, back onto intermediate tires. And Christian Horner said there was a moment where he could see this rookie on his debut passing Max and was thinking, okay, let's just make sure this kid gets past him. Okay. But you know, he didn't put a foot wrong, and he was 13th. So I think he did a good job. And you know, if you're Red Bull, you kind of hope Liam Lawson at this point gives you a bit of a headache going into the end of the season, because if he performs very well, they'll then have three drivers, Tsunoda, Ricciardo and Lawson, and obviously only two roles really there for them next year. And that becomes really interesting. So I expect to see Ricciardo back in the car, but Lawson has a great opportunity to just underline why he should be in there. And by all accounts, everyone in the team was really impressed with him. You know, he turned up. And what was funny as well was on the Friday, I had a meeting at Red Bull, went up to the bar at the hospitality. This is where it sounds like we just go on a jolly every week of our lives in this job. Went up to the bar, ordered a nice latte, and Liam Lawson was right next to me. And I've got to confess, I've never spoken to Liam Lawson before. I've followed him when he's been in junior categories, but I've never properly sat and I've not been in a press session with him. I was kind of looking at it, and I realized that they'd served me before they'd served Liam Lawson. And he was kind of timidly sat at the bar. He just wasn't being rude about it. He was just waiting for his turn. And then 24 hours later, you know, he was in the car driving. I just thought it was funny how, you know, he was kind of sat there, you know, timidly waiting. But a lot of the time it is like that for young drivers. You know, they're attached to a team and they're known around the place, but they're obviously not known as a race driver. They're just one of the young kids that's there. So great opportunity for him to establish himself. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he does here, because obviously Nick De Vries last year really impressed at Monza. Getting that AlphaTauri seat. And it's probably a circuit where he'll be much more familiar with it from his junior career. He'll have raced there a lot more. I think a really good opportunity for him to kind of get his feet under the table. And if he can, you know, if he can match or beat Tsunoda at Monza, I think it's a really good step. So good to see Lawson in the car, and hopefully Ricciardo's back sooner rather than later.
Lawrence, do you think that Lawson's result stems from brushing shoulders with paddock royalty the day before being put in the car?
It must be. Yeah. It's like, whatever was in those iced lattes that Nate had ordered. And I hope you gave him yours, Nate. I hope you offered it to him.
Well, next time I will. Next time I'll have to.
Now he's an F1 driver. You're like, oh,
next time, God. I don't think I'll get served anywhere near him. That's the problem. So I think if there's ever a book to be written in years to come, Liam Lawson, multiple race winner, I think there's going to be a mention in there. He's like, I'll never forget the shame of being served second. And it spurred me on. It was the moment in my career that drove me on.
Okay. On that note, we're going to hit our Monza race preview, shall we? Obviously, we hit at the top that Max Verstappen is going for his 10th consecutive race win. Our SIG at ESPN put together an unbelievable list of 15 F1 records that Max could potentially break this season with 9 races left on the calendar. I mean, it's outrageous. You got most consecutive wins, most wins when taking lead on the final lap, most wire-to-wire wins in a season, most hat tricks in a season, most grand slams. And if you want me to stop, then he should stop, because his performance this season has been bonkers. You guys have this list in front of you. I'm just curious, of the records that he could possibly break as we move forward into the latter part of this season, like, which one would you quantify as maybe the most impressive, or something that you'd be like, wow, that's a big deal that people should keep an eye on?
Well, if he already has the most wins in a season, and he needs 5 more from 9 to break his own record, which already broke the record held by Vettel and Schumacher. He did that in Mexico last year, or he suddenly equaled it there, or maybe broke it there. And so, you know, most wins in a season, that is a, you know, it's a big deal, because again, it's that consistency. But then again, like, if he gets this one this weekend, the consecutive wins, for somebody else to beat that, because I feel like in maybe like 10 years' time, we could have 30 races in a year, in which case most wins in a season kind of, you know, it's all relative to how many races there are. But consecutive wins, that that consistency throughout, you need such a competitive car and you need such a competitive driver. You need a driver, again, like I was saying earlier, has a dominance over his teammate. And yeah, I think that would be, that it's kind of obvious because it's right at the top of the list, but I think that one probably is the most impressive.
Nate, do you have a different opinion?
No, I was going to say that the one thing, so if you look at Vettel's record in 2013, the one thing that stopped that was the end of the season and the fact that in 2014 there was a massive rule change and then Red Bull really fell down the pecking order and Mercedes came up again. So you wonder, had that season rolled over into another year where Red Bull had the same car, would Vettel have had a longer record? Verstappen doesn't have that. This is happening right in the middle of the second year of this rule cycle. And Horner was actually asked about it on the Sunday. He said, are we going to be talking about an 18 consecutive win streak by the end of the year, which I think would be what it is roughly, I think it's 18, maybe 17. And that question would have been completely ridiculous even a few weeks ago. But having seen how he's winning all these races now, it starts to sound like it could be something he does. So I think if this consecutive win record gets broken, it's super impressive, but it's what he leaves it on, which will be amazing. I think the laps led in a season as well. I mean, needs 111 more. He could move halfway towards that this weekend if he leads every lap of the race. And stuff like that is so impressive because 111, it says here, 111 more from, I think, Lawrence, you said 9 more races left. You know, he could completely obliterate that record if you think about him leading wire to wire, start to finish of all these races. So it's, take your pick of all of those. I mean, any of them, most fastest laps in the season. I mean, now there's points available for those as well. So, he's just scoring points whenever he can. It's mad. And I think, and fair play to the SIG team for putting that together, because it just shows you, and that's records he could break. The records he has broken already this year and in the last few years have been super impressive. So I'd agree with Lawrence. I think the consecutive wins and the most wins in a season. But it's just mad. I wouldn't be surprised if he broke 10 of the 15 on that list, because he's just in such a different place right now. Yeah.
He's also on pace. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's on pace to finish every single lap.
I think so currently. Right? Yeah. That would
currently.
He's completed every single lap this year. Which is a very rare thing. The other one which I want to see, and I don't think it's on our list, but he must be in contention for it, his highest percentage of wins in a season. Because then you do away with the, there's more, races now than there used to be, because it's just the percentage of the amount of races available he's won. So at the moment, the leader in that is Alberto Ascari from 1952. There were only 8 races, but he won 6 of them. And actually, one of those was the Indy 500, which he didn't take part in. So that could arguably be even higher.
Terrible excuse.
Michael Schumacher, like bringing it up to the modern era, 72.22% in 2004, having won 13 of 18 races. Now that, I think, if Max continues on this route, he must be in contention for. Certainly, I mean, if he wins the rest of the races, then he absolutely has got it. And so that would be an incredibly impressive one, because it does away with, all of the, there's more races now and therefore it's easier to lead more laps and all that kind of stuff. And it puts it down to a pure percentage thing. So that would be interesting. And currently on that list, Max Verstappen is 5th with last year's championship, where he won 68.18% of the races, which was 15 and 22. So, we could do a whole podcast. Certainly at the end of this year, we probably should do a whole podcast on those kind of stats, because they are fascinating. And then, of course, trying to add a bit of context for what was going on in each championship and in each season and in each era of Formula One. Because, that Jim Clark is also up there 3rd with 70% from 1963. But in an era when, like Alberto Ascari, where one mistake won't just put you out of the race, it will actually, could end your life, and did happen regularly. So that's all context as well. But yeah, fascinating, some of these records to see where he fits in.
It truly is. Only 2 drivers in history have finished every race lap in a season. That was Schumacher in 2002 and then Lewis Hamilton in 2019. I feel like that's more of a nod to the team, obviously, from a reliability standpoint, but also just like you can never take a lap off. Like no mistake has really been made that has compromised his performances week in and week out. It's just truly clinical what we're seeing from Max Verstappen. So obviously we'll be on the lookout, these guys on the ground in Monza as he goes for that 10th consecutive win.
Yeah, because I think Checo has finished every race this year, but the one in Monaco, he finished 2 laps down. So there's an example where he hasn't actually finished every lap because he missed out. And I think Fernando and Lewis Hamilton have both scored points every race, and therefore, unless one of those races they were a lap down already, I think they're the two drivers who are also on so far, finishing every lap of the season. But you're absolutely right, Katie. That is very much a team achievement because you know so much goes into building these cars, and one component goes wrong. Even the cheapest components in the car sometimes can have a devastating effect on reliability. So that's impressive as well.
I was just going to jump in, sorry to labor the point on Max, but obviously he's doing so well right now. This podcast,
belabor away.
I thought what was really interesting from Christian Horner's session on Sunday, obviously friend of the podcast, can we call him that at this point, Christian Horner?
I think so.
He was asked, you know, how much of this, the German journalist, Christian Menath, one of our friends and, you know, been in the game for a long time. He said, you know, when Lewis was winning, when Seb was winning, a lot of people say, you know, a lot of it's down to luck. These guys get lucky because they're out in front and no one comes near them. How much of what Max is doing is luck and how much of it is him managing the race? And Christian said, you know, one of the things that's so impressive about Max now is when you've got this great car, you know, he knows he's got to bring it home to the finish. And I remember Lewis used to say how much he would think about the, you know, the mileage of his engine and his car when he was dominating. He knew he didn't need to push it all the time. And I think we're seeing the growth of Max as well in that. You know, he's obviously the team's doing such a great job as well, but he's not trying to win every race on lap one. You know, he knows the car he's got at his disposal. And the Max of now compared to a few years ago, you know, the growth personally for him has been huge. And I think that is probably playing just as big a part as anything right now in it, because he's driving in the fashion he needs to win all these races, which I think is, it's easy. It sounds easy to do, but it takes a lot of mental strength to do that. Especially when, you know, most of us assume he's going to win the championship. You know, he is going to win the championship at some point. It must be easy to take your foot off that pedal and kind of lose that focus. But it was just, you know, managing the race in such a way. Obviously he's going to get lucky at points, and any great driver gets lucky. But I think a lot of what looks like luck is actually, you know, a lot of preparation, a lot of risk management. I think Max is doing that really well right now. So, yeah, there's just so many things going into, you know, what's making him successful right now.
Can I just throw one last thing into this conversation to do with the reliability? The engines at the moment, I mean, this is not to take away from Max necessarily or the job that he does, but the engines at the moment are frozen. So there aren't any development upgrades coming to these engines in terms of performance. It's all just reliability. You're allowed to change stuff for reliability. So if you look at the time when Lewis was, springs to mind Malaysia 2016, which basically cost him that championship. That was a catastrophic engine failure that he really had no part in. But it was also a time when Mercedes, like everyone else, was really pushing the limits in terms of bringing stuff to the engine. So I would say there is, I mean, it's not really luck. It's just knowing the context in which some of these records are set. But I think at the moment, one of the reasons we do see at least three drivers, nearly four, possibly more, I haven't checked all of them, finishing every lap of the season so far, is because the engine, which of course, when it goes wrong, that's it, game over, isn't under development at the moment. It is frozen, and that does lead to these long periods of reliability. Anyway, that's probably enough record chat, isn't it?
We've built Max up on it.
We've dragged him down again. We've built him up. We've dragged him down. I think we've done a good job. It's been very rounded in that sense.
The main takeaway is Max is amazing, and you know there's no fluking nine victories in a row. I want to make that absolutely clear. But the reliability factor, I think, you know, you got to look at the context of the season as well.
Lovely job summarizing the conversation.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
All right, I want to look at Monza. Obviously, we mentioned that this is Ferrari's home race. They haven't had a podium here since Leclerc's win in 2019. You obviously mentioned, Lawrence, that Sainz salvaged P5 at Zandvoort. Leclerc obviously didn't have the same kind of fate. You mentioned Mercedes struggles. One team we didn't mention on the weekend was McLaren. So of those three teams, you've got Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren. Nate, I'll start with you. Who do you feel like needs to have a bigger weekend in Monza?
I think it's got to be Ferrari. You know, this is their home race, Monza, the Tifosi. And, you know, we're just talking about the great vibes there was in Zandvoort for Max, his home race. You know, you always feel coming to Ferrari, there's just always added attention on them. They've got a new color scheme, a new livery on their car this weekend. It's a nod to them winning the Le Mans 24 Hours. And they always try and do something around Monza. And it is such a special place as well. You know, it's kind of synonymous with Ferrari. It's one of those rare sporting occasions where the event is synonymous with a team. So Ferrari's always under the microscope. And I think as well, just given the fact that they're coming there and Max is going for this record as well, I feel like there's just, you know, you feel like, I don't think Ferrari's going to beat them, you know, is going to stop Max getting that record on a normal day. But you want the story to be Max got the record, but also there was a Ferrari driver or two on the podium with him. You know, that's, in the context of the season, that's a pretty good story. It might be a bit far-fetched because obviously Perez is still in the game and McLaren and Mercedes are in a really good spot. But yeah, you just feel that Ferrari right now, I think they need a feel-good story. And I think the McLaren had enough kind of goodwill coming into the summer break. I think that they're in a good place. Mercedes, I mean, they had a bad race, but, you know, I think the pace is clearly there. Whereas I think, you know, globally speaking, Ferrari is probably in a bit more of a mess. So coming into the home race has got to be them, I'd say.
Do you agree, Lawrence, or would you put more onus on Mercedes or McLaren?
No, I think this is the pressure is all on Ferrari this weekend. Okay. Just because they've had such a poor season up to this point. Not just in the performance of the car, which hasn't been good, but also just realizing results. There have been occasions when the cars look quick, and I'm kind of optimistic that actually the Ferrari could be quite quick here. It was good in Canada. They didn't quite get the result. Remember, we had that wet qualifying session where they made the wrong choice with the tyres, but the car in the race was actually genuinely fast. And if you're going to compare like one relatively low downforce track with another, a fairly good comparison is Canada to Monza. So I'm kind of hopeful that there's something there. And they've also been saying for a few weeks now that they've got some updates coming. They'll definitely have Monza specific updates. So I'm hoping that they've kind of put a little bit more kind of Maranello magic into those in the hope that they can secure something. And then also for a bit of historical kind of, I don't know what the word is, but just for a bit of historical context, last time a team was going to win every single race of the season was in 1988, and it was McLaren. And the team that beat them and the won single race that season was Ferrari at Monza. And it was, you know, it was an important race because it happened not long after the death of Enzo Ferrari, the founder of Ferrari. And I just feel like, you know, in such a miserable season for Ferrari, you know, it would almost kind of be fitting that they take a victory here. Not that I don't want to see Max get this record, but I probably would rather see a Ferrari win at Monza.
And I think Lawrence and I have both been lucky that we've seen Ferrari win at Monza. I think I saw Charles win here in 2019. As a journalist, but I went with my dad to Monza in 2006, saw what was Schumacher's penultimate win. And that, I mean, if you talk about special moments in racing, Ferrari winning at Monza, there's just something about it. You know, the crowd, that everyone who's there goes down the main straight. I don't think the podium is the same if Ferrari haven't won it. It's that famous podium that overlooks it. And I'll never forget looking up at the podium and Schumacher was right there. I was about 15 years old. And at that point, you felt like, well, this guy's just going to keep winning forever. You know, he'd not won the championship before, and he was fighting Alonso for that year's championship. But it's as close to, you know, when people say a sporting event was magical, that was what it felt like then. And I think that is probably the biggest regret and sadness about Ferrari right now, is I think that some of that magic has kind of waned off in this drought period they've got. It's not going to come back this weekend. It's not just going to, you know, magically come back. But I think that's where Ferrari's long-term ambition needs to be, is the team is obviously iconic and it's famous, but turning Monza into a place where, you know, it feels like it's kind of a, you know, a pilgrimage to see Ferrari race. Yeah. I think for me personally, I think it's lost a bit of that because they just haven't, it's not like they dominated there like they did in the Schumacher days. But again, perception in sport can be so important. And that's why, you know, strong weekend here, you know, strong finish to the season, and you know, the whole narrative around the team starts to change. So great, great place for them to kind of flip that around, I think.
You guys are messing with my mind.
That, Sorry, Katie. Just while we're on the subject of 2005, because I just feel like we've got to move off it. That was the race of Michael Schumacher. Sorry, 2006 Italian Grand Prix. That was the race Schumacher announced his retirement.
Nate,
as a fan, were you aware of that afterwards? Do you remember people talking about it? Because he was basically retiring from the very top at the time.
Yeah, so the first person who told us that Schumacher had retired from racing effective immediately. So he'd quit on the spot. And obviously, he still had two races left in the championship or through it. So we were like, that sounds quite unlikely. and we got a bus back and everyone was talking about Kimi. Everyone was saying, Kimi Raikkonen, Kimi Raikkonen. I think by the time we got back to the airport, we knew that Raikkonen was in. And this is the days before Twitter and the days before breaking news. But everyone kind of knew it was Kimi. And I remember we landed and we drove back. And we got in really, really late to my house. And on the radio, the BBC announced Kimi Raikkonen is going to replace Schumacher. And we got back to find that my sister had gone to a, this is going somewhere, I promise. They'd gone to a cat shelter that weekend and she'd brought back this sickly kitten that my mum had basically been looking after. And as a punishment for my sister bringing this back without permission, she said, well, your brother can name him. And my sister was like, no, you can't let, he'll give it a stupid name. So I walked in, was told I had power to name this cat, named him Kimi. And Kimi lived to the ripe old age of 16, but he was named that weekend because when I came back to start with, I was like, well, Shumi would be a good name, but he's kind of, you know, he's on the way out. So Kimi's the new man. So that was how we remembered the age of Kimi. I would always just think, well, Monza 2006 and then add on whatever's left. So we did find out and, you know, a cat's whole life was ruined because of it because I had to give him the name.
Chris, I don't know if I'd say ruined.
He had a great innings. I think it's a good name for a cat or dog. So if anyone listening wants to steal it for your next pet, you have my blessing.
Time for predictions.
Katie, you were lost for words of what to say next. You're like, we're done.
kind of. That's just the flipping of the page is my pivot here to predictions. McLaren forked me in Zandvoort. So I really need to bring my A game. You guys mess with my mind. Lawrence had me leaning. Maybe I should put a Ferrari on the podium. Then Nate, you came in and made me think that they lost all their magic and luster. So I'm not starting. Nate, you can start. And with Kimi on the mind, hopefully.
Yeah. Can I just put Kimi the cat on the podium? Yeah. No. Well, I think we all did fairly badly, Katie. I think we only
got Max.
We all got the gimme, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't get the rest. So I'm going to say Max gets the 10th win. I'm sure all of us will. I don't know. I think I'm going to put Perez in second because, you know, he didn't have the best result. But I think we're starting to see that Perez is... he's getting over the worst of what was happening to him at the start of the year. He's still making some mistakes, but you know, the mistake he made at the end of the race was in the rain. I don't think the forecast currently has that. He was obliterated by Max on pace, but actually I think there's just been a step up from him. I don't think it's been big enough to call it impressive, but I'd put him in second. And then I'm gonna follow up with what I was saying about Ferrari and Monza being a magical place. I'm going to put Sainz in third. I'm going to put Charles there because I think Sainz just seems to be a bit more comfortable with the car at the moment. And I'd love to see a Ferrari get up there. Verstappen, Perez, Sainz.
Love it. Okay. Solid picks there. So you did go with a Ferrari. Interesting. All right, Lawrence.
I did, yeah.
What say you?
Okay. I'm bored of just picking Max the whole time. And I know it's going to ruin his 10 if he doesn't get it, but I'm sure he'll get that another point in his career, probably the following 10 races. So I'm going to go with Charles Leclerc to break the Red Bull run of victories, as Ferrari did to McLaren in 1988, followed by Sergio Perez. I'm saying something happens to Max. Like, I think if Max is actually in the race, then he's going to win it. But I'm assuming he has a reliability issue or something like that. And then, so yeah, Leclerc, Perez, and then Lewis Hamilton in third.
Wow.
Well, that's a race. That's a race I want to see.
For sure.
That'd be amazing.
He does this, though.
Yeah, I mean, every now and again, I try and pick one like that.
Yeah. I like it. I just think it's just so difficult to say anything but Max, but I respect where you're going. People listening to this are going to think Max insulted Lawrence at the weekend or something because he's kind of, there's been a bit of like, no, you know, he could win, but maybe he won't.
I would like to see a more competitive season.
I should put Liam Lawson third. Maybe
that. that I would like.
Okay. Let's not get out of hand here.
Back to reality.
back to reality. I wish I had the luxury of doing what Lawrence is doing, predicting a race that I would like to see. I am too far behind in the points. And do you like that I've stopped updating our lovely listeners and viewers on the standings?
I noticed that. I didn't want to say anything, but...
Zach actually needs to help me get that back on track. Anyways, I don't have that luxury, so I'm going to go with Max Verstappen to take the win, followed by... I went with Lando Norris, I believe, last week. I'm going to do it again because I do feel like the McLaren has been strong on straights, right, Lawrence? Can... Decent.
It actually hasn't, but they are bringing a Monza low downforce spec kind of wing and everything.
They're good in slow corners?
No, they're not. That's actually, they're good in high speed corners. So I don't think it's going to...
Scrap the episode. I burned to the ground.
But Katie, also remember, every time I say this about a team, they go and do the opposite thing in the race.
Katie, this is how he gets us. This is how he gets us. He suckers us in by...
You go for Lando.
I'm the brainy one of the pod. No. It's all a red herring. Always a red herring.
If you're listening, I just did a job describing McLaren and their car. But I'm still going to pick Lando Norris in second. And third, I'm gonna go with Charles Leclerc. I'm going to put a Ferrari up there. You've sold me on...
One Ferrari on a podium.
One Ferrari. Like,
we're completely bought on the magic then. That's good.
We are sellouts, and I hope that we see it. I hope that the two of you eat as much pizza as you possibly can. You drink tons and tons of wine. I am unbelievably jealous, as is our viewers and listeners, that you are in Italy right now. Enjoy what I hope is another fascinating and entertaining race. And we will, of course, be back next week to unlap it all. I actually like the sound of that. Goodbye.